G'day and welcome to Diz Down Under, episode 13.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Lewis.
And welcome to Diz Down Under for our unofficial view of Disney from Australia. On this episode, we're actually going to be a little bit closer to home.
Yes, that's right. We're going to be start our exploration of the Asian parks.
And there were three Asian parks. Well, technically four.
Yeah, there's four Asian parks. Just happens to be two of them in the one place.
Well, okay. There's three Asian resorts.
Yes.
And on this particular trip, I desperately tried to work out how we could do all three at once.
I'm kind of glad that we didn't, though. I think spreading it out made a lot more sense.
Well, because I must admit, the second time that we went back to Hong Kong Disney, I was a little bit confused with some of the stuff that we'd done at Shanghai, because we did Hong Kong and Shanghai in the same trip, and then we did Tokyo, and then we did Hong Kong off the back of that.
Yes, yeah.
Hmm. We decided that we would go to Shanghai first.
Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that we really wanted to go there in the first year of its operation.
Mm.
So that was why we decided, well, at Christmas time, we would go to Shanghai and then we would do Hong Kong on the way back through. Because mm-hmm. obviously we're a little bit closer to Hong Kong and we've got to go through that to get to Shanghai in the first place.
Yeah, sure.
So we thought that we'd plan everything around that. And it was with the going to Shanghai, it's a little bit different to some of our other travels we've done. Because to date, if we're going to the UK or Europe, or if we're going to America, it's relatively easy to get everything sorted. Because like with Europe and the UK, we don't need to have visas. And with America, it's just that visa waiver system, which you do pretty much online. So it's fairly easy to do that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But with Shanghai, you're actually going into China. And so with China, you need to get a visa sorted out before you go there. And so even before we got on the plane, there was things we had to do, like going to their consulate here in Perth to get the visa all sorted out, which was a fairly straightforward kind of thing to do. You just had to book an appointment and fill out some forms and take down your passport.
You said to be very precise with the forms and filling them out.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right, because you don't want to make any mistakes and have to go back through everything again. So we got all that sorted out, and then we decided to book in for Shanghai. And we thought before we went to Disney, we'd like acclimatize ourselves to China a bit, because we'd never been there before. So just go there and spend, was it two nights or three nights we spent in Shanghai before we went to Disney?
So we had 2 days in Shanghai. We were really lucky. I found a nice little hotel which had some really good restaurant options inside. So we didn't actually do a lot of eating outside of that in the evenings, but we did some exploring. We did our traditional jump on the big red bus, although was it blue? I can't remember.
I can't remember the color of it.
Jumped on the tour bus to do the city tour, which, we've found in other cities to be a great way to just orientate yourself and to see what cool things there might be that you might want to see while you're in town. We did a lot of walking as well, didn't we?
Yeah, just walked around and checked things out. And also, we went on a ferry as well. It was just good to get around and have a look at what Shanghai had to offer.
And there were some crazy shopping things. I have a recollection of some angry birds and you sitting in an egg.
Yes, it wasn't an Angry Birds store there. That was in that mall thing where they had some really interesting shops and there was a staircase that was a piano, if I remember correctly, as
Yeah, that's right. And I lost my beanie.
You did. Mm. You did. You lost your beanie. We had to go on an expedition to find you another beanie.
Yeah, that's all right, though. And they had a Disney store.
They did. It was an awesome Disney store as well,
I thought. The whole area was really themed around it, wasn't it? Mm. It wasn't just the store itself. And it was in almost like a little village square, wasn't it?
Yeah, because they had a like a bell tower, and that was Disney themed. And because we were there at Christmas, of course, they had a really nice Christmas tree set up and everything like that. It was, amazing store.
The only thing I found a little bit crazy in Shanghai was the traffic.
Mm.
So any time that we were able to observe it, because obviously we weren't driving there, it was a little bit crazy. So in the cab on the way from, maybe I should start back a little bit. So we caught a cab to our hotel, but that wasn't the original plan. We jumped onto the maglev because we thought that that actually went into the city itself, but we were wrong. And so we were a little bit confused about the train system that took us into the city, like their metro. And so we decided to jump in a cab, and the roads are just nuts. And it wasn't like there was a lot of traffic on there. It's just that there doesn't seem to be a lot of rules.
No, it's very much, I would say, organized chaos, but there doesn't seem to be any organization there. It's just chaotic, but they seem to work. It seems to work for them, which is amazing.
And that's the important thing, if it works. Mm. Yeah. And so we had our two nights in Shanghai City, mm-hmm. and then we decided to jump in a cab and head out to Disneyland. So our cab experience wasn't terrible on the way into the city. It wasn't great because the guy was a little bit dodgy. He didn't stop outside, actually, at the hotel. He dropped us, you know, beside the hotel. It was all very strange, and we kind of didn't know a lot of what was what.
Okay, so in Shanghai, you've got actual official cabs, and generally if you're catching a cab from the airport, there'll be official cabs. So when you get into the cab, you get the people to ask the driver how much it'll cost, and they'll write that down so that you've got a actual cost in writing. And the reason for that is that sometimes cab drivers will take you the long way around and cost you more than it should do, which we will get to in a second. The second thing is that a lot of the cabs there aren't actually cabs, and they will just tell you whatever the amount of money is to pay and that sort of thing. So again, you've just got to be careful which cabs you're getting into. Find out how much it'll cost beforehand, hopefully if they speak English. And yeah, just be careful with that.
Right, so when we decided to go out to Disneyland because of that experience, and we were staying in a fairly prominent brand of hotel when we were staying in the city, we asked the concierge to grab us a cab, and they did. And it was a bit weird once we got into the cab. Someone leant in the window and said something, and that was a bit weird. And we're like, okay, that was weird. So the cab took off, and they've got a weird underground system that obviously goes under the river. And so we entered into that. And then when we came out, I was sort of looking around and sort of thinking, oh, it's a bit strange. So I pulled out my phone and looked at Google Maps. I thought, oh, we're going that way. Okay. Oh, maybe that's the way the highway goes around. I'm like looking. I'm like, this doesn't seem to be right. And we only speak English, so that was probably a big disadvantage there. And the cab driver didn't speak English, and so when it got to a point where I was pretty confident that we were definitely going the wrong way and things were probably going a little bit badly, we had to work out how we were going to communicate this on a freeway and, you know, driving at speed. So the cab driver, I don't know how to say this, he seemed to understand that we wanted to go to Disneyland. And so it was all like, oh, I'm so sorry. But it was weird. It was like it was definitely intentional that he was taking us the wrong way. Especially that, you know, concierge seemed to know where we wanted to go, because those guys were great. Like, they all spoke English, so they interpreted for us, and that seemed to be all fine. But it wasn't fine in the cab. So what should have been, a half hour drive at the most, worked out to be closer to an hour. And I was furious.
Yeah.
And I think when we were pulling up to the Disneyland Hotel, I was at the point where I was just like, no, we'll pay him what the cab fare was worth if he'd gone the right way. And, you know, Lewis had a very good point that, you know, if he has to do this kind of thing to make a living, then just give him what was on the meter, because, you know, it's not really that much difference in Australian dollars. Anyway, so when we got there, I mean, that was the main thing, is that eventually we ended up at our destination.
Yeah.
I did have a few very angry words to say to him once you were out of the cab, though. Anyway, so we got there, and the hotel was just unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah, it is the height of opulence at this hotel. And everything is, like, brand new and just absolutely fantastic.
The only thing that I think probably would beat it is the Grand Floridian.
I actually preferred the, because we stayed in the Disneyland Hotel in each of the Disney parks, I preferred them to the Grand Floridian.
Oh, right.
Hands down. Hmm. Like, the Grand Floridian is nice and everything, but
is it a size that's too big?
No, it just doesn't do it for me. It's just, there's something about it that is not warm.
Anyway, so we got there and we had no idea about how to check in, because what we didn't realise was that, because we'd booked club level rooms, was that there's a whole different check-in process, which was quite new for us.
Mm. Yeah, so when we went up to the reception, they promptly got somebody to take us to another area, which was up a couple of floors up, and took us into the club lounge to get checked in, which was quite nice.
Yeah, it's just a completely different experience from what we've had previously. So felt quite special.
And it did give you that, when you went up there, the club lounge is set facing towards the Disneyland park, and you had this most amazing view of the castle and of the Tron ride and all those kind of things. It was a real great introduction to it, to being in that area.
Absolutely, because you don't really get a view of it when you drive in, do you?
No, not really, no. Because the park is situated on the other side of a lake, and then you've got the Toy Story Hotel, which is like almost around a corner.
Mm.
So it's a real great reveal when you finally go out there and see it.
And so we checked in. We got, I think the room that we had wasn't a particularly fabulous view. View of the car park by memory. Yeah. But that didn't really matter because we didn't really spend that much time in there, quite frankly.
No.
If it was waking hours, we were either in the park or sometimes in the evening you'd find us down at the club lounge. Mm. And it was just too much to do to spend time in your room.
And the reason we actually decided to go club lounge in this in Shanghai was because when we stay at a deluxe resort in America, it was about the same price staying club level in Shanghai.
Mm. Yeah, I remember you saying that was the justification for it. And we thought, well, why not?
But the thing is, like, we didn't need to eat dinner and stuff like that, because in the club level they had they had snacks, but the snacks were literally just dinner. It was like a tiny buffet dinner that you could go and have.
Yeah, and breakfast was sorted.
Yeah, and also they had like drinks, like cocktails and stuff like that for a certain amount of time in the evening as well. So it was just the nicest place to stay.
It was indeed.
Mm.
And we didn't eat there first, though, did we?
No, because we got there too late, was it? Or
No. When we got there, we had a lunch reservation. And where was that lunch reservation, Lou?
Oh, it was a Royal Banquet Hall, wasn't it? Yeah, that was a bit of an experience. So when you first arrived there, you checked in, and then you met, I think it was Aurora that we met, wasn't it, on the way in?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
And we had issues with our photo pass, didn't we?
Yeah, it was.
It's quite a complicated little system, but by learning at Shanghai, we then knew what to do when we got to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It was just a bit tricky in the way that you had to set it up. But once we had it sorted, it was all fine.
Yeah, no, it was like frustrating as well, because, the English second language thing, if the person you're speaking to couldn't help you out, then they'd find someone who could.
I think they handled it really well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so when we first got there, though, the first thing we were going to do was to go and try to get fast passes for Soarin', because we'd never done Soarin' before. So I went off on a mission to go and get fast passes, and promptly saw, because it was only about, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock?
If that.
Yeah. So I walked around to where the fast passes were, and they were just all covered up and everything like that. And the customer was there going, no more fast passes. And I said, oh, really, what time of day did they run out? And the park opened at 9, and he said, 9:30. So, like, all the fast passes for Soarin' all day run out within half an hour.
Yeah.
And,
we found out why the next morning.
Yeah, yeah. And so that, the next morning we were there, we did to go there first thing, and it was nuts.
That dinner, the lunch was a little bit, it was a little bit odd. It was like they tried to do something that was almost like fine dining, but it was a set menu. Only choice was the set menu. But I must say I found it really, really awkward trying to eat and then having people coming up to you and saying, oh, Mickey wants to say hello. It wasn't Mickey though, sorry, was it?
Yeah, we saw Mickey, yeah.
No, but like first up, I can't remember who it was that we saw first up.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic about, like, you know, making sure you're getting the best experience in terms of meet and greets with characters. But it was a little bit of a disruption when you're just like, I just want to eat. Have I got salad between my teeth before we take this photo?
Yeah, so what you're saying is you're not a fan of the character meet and greets during dining?
I think just in that particular circumstance, because it felt like it was very rushed as well. Mm. That was good fun, and they were absolutely lovely. So who did we meet during that meal?
We met Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Daisy.
Ah, that's right, because they were wearing the, what do you call that?
A Renaissance? Medieval. Is it Renaissance Fair? Medieval, oh, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The medieval outfits, which was awesome. But I was just flicking through my photos from the meal, and I forgot completely about the dessert.
Oh, yes.
So it was Cinderella's slipper, and it was filled with strawberries and just the most humongous raspberries and blueberries, as well as a macaron stack, which was just, it looked small, but it was so lovely.
Yeah, the food wasn't too bad, but it was one of those things where it's like you're doing a kind of fine dining experience without alcohol, because again, it's a park that's completely dry.
Yeah.
So it's kind of odd, but it was still a very, very enjoyable experience, I thought.
Yeah, and I think because they were doing very Western food as well. Even like they served duck, but it was done in a very Western way.
Yeah.
And like it's just like the food, it just seemed awkward, the food. But I think, you know, as an experience, I'd recommend doing it once.
Yeah, yeah. That was.
I just wouldn't book it again.
No. But that was the only place in the actual park that we ate the whole time we were there.
Yeah, you're right.
In that restaurant, because we did eat out in the Disney town or Disney village. I think one was called Blue Frog. And the other one was the
Wolfgang Parks.
Yeah, and they. I think Wolfgang Parks was the better of the two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But so after we'd experienced the dining, I think we went and started to hit some of the rides at that point in time.
We did, because you're in Disneyland, so why not? So my recollection is. So the first thing that we got onto was an old favourite of both of ours, which was Buzz Lightyear.
Yes, yes. But it's an old favourite of ours, but this is not that old favourite.
No.
Because this is Buzz Lightyear Planet Rescue. And so it's the same concept. You know, you're in a ride vehicle, you've got a gun, but it's just really updated, really modern kind of experience.
And I still kick butt.
Yes. So, but yeah, it was a great ride though. Really, just I think out of all the Buzz Lightyears, it's definitely my favorite version of it.
Oh well, they've just taken the best aspects of them and put them together in a way that modernizes it, but doesn't take away from the theming. They did really well.
I just had a thought: could you imagine a Buzz Lightyear-like attraction using a rideless track system vehicle?
This is going to be our solution for everything.
But
can you imagine?
But the thing is, like, most of the...
If you had the teacups, but it was a trackless ride vehicle, how awesome would that be?
But that would work.
I know.
But no, I'm just saying, like, with Buzz Lightyear, you've got the added element of, because when you're in the cart, in the ride vehicle, you're facing like one way or the other, and you can spin the vehicle around.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of a bit of a prick move if you do that, because, the other person's aiming at something and you spin it to look at something else. Maybe that's the point of the ride, is that you're supposed to be annoying each other by constantly moving it. But, no?
How much of a sped would you have to be to feel annoyed because you'd been moved?
Well, that's why I never move, because I think you'd get angry with me if I moved the cart.
I probably would.
Yeah, see? So, but with the, if it was a trackless ride system and you're constantly moving and aiming at different things, that could be awesome.
Yeah, that's true. And it'd make it more constant all the way through.
Exactly.
And so that was really cool.
Mm.
And that was the start of our adventure. But the next part was absolutely amazing. They'd taken the teacups, added a little bit of Winnie the Pooh, and called it the Honeypot Spin.
Mm.
Wasn't that cool?
Yes, it was. It was very awesome. And the actual, you know, the theming was great, but I think what really just made it awesome was the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The buzzing.
Yeah.
I wish that I had a recording of it.
Yes. Yeah. No, that would
really
be very
wish
cool.
That I'd thought to do that, because it was really, really neat. Mm. It was so well done. It just really added to the atmosphere. And you're sitting there in the freezing cold, because again, we decided to go to a Northern Hemisphere park in the coldest month possible. And it was just so heartwarming.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, the teacups are really good. I do like teacups, but I think you need to have little slight variances in the attractions in each park just to make it worth the effort to travel to them, I think.
Absolutely, which is what they did with Pirates.
This is completely just reimagining Pirates. It's like the Battle for the Sunken Treasure is just something else.
And it has almost no queue all the time.
I know. I wonder if that's going to change, though, because maybe it's because the Pirates of the Caribbean aren't a well-known property in China, because the movies might not have done big there. They might not have even shown there. Maybe they're like Star Wars, where it's only just recently come to the country.
Mm.
But I believe that the most recent Pirates of the Caribbean film has been released in China.
Excellent.
So maybe now the ride might be more popular because people know kind of what it's about. But that ride is unbelievable.
I would fly there if I could afford it, like right now, to ride it again. It was so good. It was amazing. Just such a different take on everything inside the ride. So how the ride moves, the visual aspects were just out of this world.
It's just the vehicle itself, like you get into it, you think it's like Pirates, you think it's normal Pirates, and then you just go down, and the first thing you do is kind of like go through where their Blue Bayou kind of restaurant is, the restaurant within Pirates, although I think that's a quick service and not a...
That's right.
It's Barbossa's Bounty, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So you go past that, and then you go past a couple of classic Pirate scenes. But, you know, when you've got normal Pirates, it's like human beings. But in this, it's skeletons. Like the scene with the guys in the jail with the dog and the, you know, trying to get the keys. And they're all skeletal. It's just, it's really, really cool. It's a great way to start the ride. And then they have an effect where you've got a skeleton there. And then all of a sudden, the skeleton literally jumps to life and becomes Captain Jack Sparrow. And how they do that, I have no idea.
Disney magic.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the way that this ride works is just phenomenal. Like, it's definitely one of my favorite rides in the world that we've ever been on.
Apart from what?
No, well, I mean, like this.
Commit to it, Sutton. Well, either it's your favorite or it's not.
No, it's okay, can't say.
It's one of my favorites.
It's one of my favorites. It's one of my favorites because, like.
But yeah, what else has made the list?
Well,
I'm just curious.
Forbidden Journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely up there. Forbidden Journey is definitely one of them. Transformers, I'll put that up there as well. Mystic Manor, Ratatouille, you know,
So it's a pretty big list.
I don't want to be stopping myself from loving things, you know. I love them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really just immersive ride, and the use of screens and practical effects and the movement of the craft that you're in is just amazing.
Yeah. So Christmas is here. I'm going to continue my little campaign.
So what other rides have they got in Shanghai?
They've got lots of rides. Shall I go through them in order of what we went on them?
Yes, if you'd like.
Well, because I've got one that we could probably just say, hey, we went on it, which is Dumbo.
Yep.
And then the next ride that we went on was Tron.
Yeah, Tron, which is...
It was a terrible ride. I don't know why they bothered putting it in or making it so big. Like, why did they bother? You have to walk onto it and you have to go through so many little... It was great.
Yes, it's a brilliant ride. It's just and the fact that the property, you know, it's not... it's a cult-loved property, but it's not a well-loved property.
No.
Like, not everyone is a fan of Tron, but to be able to make a immersive ride and make you understand what's going on, particularly because they were doing it in a, you know, a different language to what we speak, but you knew what the go was, like, you know, in the on the pre-show videos and stuff.
Yeah, well, they had subtitles, which was really cool of them to do.
Yeah, yeah. But it was great. The ride, like getting onto the vehicle, like, because it's such an odd way of like sitting on a roller coaster.
But even before you do that, the way that you actually go through the building, you to get to the ride vehicle, you end up doing this little preview of another group taking off. And then you've probably got another 5 or 10 minutes before you actually get onto the ride. And the build-up, the way that they've created this build-up is just amazing.
Because you go into that room, don't you? And then the room's
And then the windows, well, the windows don't open, but they go from being opaque to being able to see down, and you see the other people taking off.
That's an amazing effect, like, just to be able to go from, have, like, glass that's, like, not there, and then all of a sudden it's there.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Oh, what I wouldn't... give to go back and just to have that experience again, because like once you've done it, it's still amazing the next time you do it, but just that whole that first build up to where you first get on. But you're right, it is a really peculiar way of riding. We'd done something similar, hadn't we?
It was in Dream World, yeah,
and it's called McDoohan's Racing. McDoohan was a famous motorcyclist.
Yeah.
So we've done something similar, but this just puts it on a whole new level.
Yeah, the one we did was out in the open kind of roller coaster, but it was tiny and nothing like doing Tron. Like Tron has all the theming, and you get into the ride vehicle, and it's got this massive just like launch, and it launches you outside. So you've got a small outside section, and then you're back in, and you're doing this dark ride section, and then there's screens, and you just the way they've done it is absolutely amazing. It's gonna blow away the American audience when they open it up at Walt Disney World a couple of years.
For sure. I mean, we went on it twice in a row on that first day. And I think that each day that we went back, we went on it at least once. It was, I think, I'm looking through the list, and there was a day that we went on it 1, 2, 3, 4 times. but it is that kind of ride that you can just do again and again and again, and then you discover going on the front.
Yeah.
And that was just incredible. I didn't think I was going to like it, but after that it was just like, can we go on the front, can we go on the front, can we go on the front? Just being hurtled down a track, face first, pretty much like you're bent over, so you're not at track level, but you're pretty close to the track. Being at the front was just so, just the experience was so much more intense.
Yeah, it just because you're not looking at somebody else's back as well.
Yeah, true.
Like because when you're doing
or butt crack
or butt crack, it's just you're all you can see, as you said, is just the track in front of you, and just bang, you're just going for it. It would be good to be able to try the back and see if there's any, because it sometimes feels like it's faster at the back of these things than at the front.
Yeah, that's true.
But it'd be interesting to try that out, because when you go and line up for it, they kind of just allocate you to whatever bike you want unless you request the front. And they've got a separate one where you go and line up. So if it was quite busy and everyone was requesting the front, you might have to wait for a few ride vehicles to go past, but it's well worth it, I think.
Absolutely. Once we'd done that, that was it. I think it probably took about two or three rides before you talked me onto it, talked me into going onto the front.
Yes, yeah. But no, it was great. I was just an amazing. I think it's definitely the best roller coaster that we've ever been on. We've seen, and right now in Australia, they're just opening up a new roller coaster on the Gold Coast. And yeah, it's kind of cool, but it's all just outside. And it's called the Joker, and there's no real, you know, theming to it other than it being purple.
Oh, no one does it like Disney.
I know, but that's what I like about Disney, is having the dark ride elements to it and giving a story to the coaster. It's brilliant.
It was pretty cool.
Well, we
also did Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
Yep.
Which is pretty much, I think, for all intents and purposes, the same as Walt Disney World.
It's the same, but there are differences.
What are the differences?
Well, the end scene, I don't believe it's the same end scene that you've got in the American version.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Okay.
And I think the ride vehicles might be a bit more swingy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because
when they swing from side to side.
Yeah, because okay. I don't remember them swinging all that much in America, but in Shanghai, they were really swinging there.
Right.
And the time of day that you do it as well is very important, because we did that on the first day we were there, and we decided on the first day to not do the fireworks, and we thought we'll take in a lot of the rides where they usually have long wait times while the fireworks are on.
Mm.
And so one of them was the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, and we were on it just as the fireworks were crescendoing and finishing up.
And we came up over that hill, and yeah, it was just beautiful.
So if you can time it right, that's what I would suggest.
I think that was pretty much a fluke.
yeah, exactly. But it's still a great ride, and I'd highly recommend, you know, getting in there and getting your fast passes for it, because, again, it's another one of those long wait time rides.
And we took advantage of the line for Peter Pan being a little bit lower,
mm,
and also Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, yeah. Which isn't as good as Pooh's Honey Hunt, but still, it was still a good version of Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Wasn't too bad. I'm surprised that they were putting in new things, but they went very traditional with them.
Mm. Well, how do you mean?
Like, it's a brand new park.
Yes.
So they put in these rides and they went very traditional with them.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of reasons for it. I mean, cost would be a factor to begin with, because if you've, you know, got those rides and it's just a matter of putting them in there, all the design work and everything's already been done.
Mm.
So I'm glad that they kind of like put some classic rides in there, but then they did things like the Honeypot Spin and the update on the Pirates of the Caribbean. Do you know, the only thing I find that was missing in the park was, you know, they didn't have a Haunted Mansion. And in Hong Kong, they've dealt with that issue by putting Mystic Manor in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they need some sort of manor or mansion attraction.
Yeah, maybe that's in the plans for any extensions that they might do down the track, because the park that we visited is already being expanded.
Yes, Toy Story Land's probably going to open up like either late this year or early next year, I think.
Mm.
But I think that's pretty much a carbon copy of the Hong Kong and the Paris versions.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And I think that probably is in recognition of the fact that it has been popular, and I think they were probably wise to put in what they did, which is still fairly significant in terms of the variety of rides. And then build on it from there as the popularity grows.
Yes, yeah. No, and they've got a lot of room to expand in this place.
Yeah.
A lot of land there.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel where we were, there was clearly space for more hotels to go around that lake area.
Mm.
So that was the first day. And what we didn't actually talk about was how we got to the park.
Oh, yeah, because there's several ways of doing that.
So we had a number of options. We could jump on a bus, which we did.
Mm.
And then on the way back, we thought, we'll check out the boat. So our hotel was directly across the lake from the park.
Mm.
And so there was a ferry option. We thought, let's catch the ferry.
Yeah.
And it was quite a nice way to get to and from the park. But we also discovered that it was probably about the same time by the time you waited for a ferry to walk to the park as well. It was cooler weather, so you wouldn't always want to do it that way, but it was quite beautiful. You walked along the edge of the lake and there was a nice walkway with a little bridge. I thought it was a nice way to go to the park as well.
Yeah, and nice gardens are all had good upkeep, and like you could see the people there upkeeping it constantly.
Yeah, it must be so hard in that cold weather.
Mm.
You know, just trying to keep plants alive, that must be a feat on its own. Mm. That was a really nice way to get to and from the park. We had a bit of variety. We didn't catch the bus a second time.
No, we never did that again. No. It was
pointless.
Yeah, the bus is pointless. I can understand from the Toy Story Hotel that it would be, you know, beneficial because that's a bit further out. But from the Disney Hotel, it's either walk or ferry. Like, I can't see another way of doing it.
So day two, we woke up. Dropped into the club for a bit of brekkie. Had our noodle options because there were noodle options. Yeah. That was great. The food there was absolutely splendid.
Oh, the food in the club lounge was amazing. Yeah.
And then we went down to the park and experienced the running of the bulls, which was just nuts. I think we pretty much just stood on the spot and watched it happen because it was just so many people just going, right. Like, literally going right because that was the direction that took you to soaring. So the game plan, it seems, for everyone is to rope drop, get into the park, wait for the park to open, ignore absolutely everyone in all the cast members saying, please walk, don't run, all the signs saying, please walk, don't run, and just bolt to get to Soarin'. So people either went straight into the ride queue or straight to get a fast pass. And that's why, my friend, there were no fast passes by 9:30 in the morning.
That line was nuts. It was
doubled up and bent over, but there was some sort of order in the chaos. It was quite the experience.
So we got there eventually, and we got our return time, which was like at 2:30 or something like that in the afternoon.
Like that, yeah.
So we were good. We went, okay, we're sorted for Sora and we know we're going to go on to it. That's fine. And then on that day, I think we did more of we did lots of rides again, but we did some of the shows as well.
And we did some of their different rides. So they had the jetpacks.
Oh, yes.
And we hadn't seen anything like that. It was like a different take on the Astro Orbiter, except you're kind of sitting side by side and it's made up like you're sitting and wearing jetpacks. So you got your legs free and dangling. That was really neat.
Yeah, it was a very cool ride. Like, it's a really long wait because it's a really slow loader.
Yeah.
But I still think it's well worth doing if you can get, if you can minimize your wait time.
Oh, I think it's worth doing regardless. And we did the pirate stunt show. So the shows are done in Mandarin, so we didn't really know everything that was going on all the time, but I think that it was pantomime-esque enough that we, you know, you could understand the gist of what was happening, but the stunts were just amazing. We were standing in that pre-show bit and there were other people that were clearly European. They left because there was a lot of talking going on. But I actually enjoyed that because that was the pantomime side of it.
Yeah.
And it was pre-show, so it was all done on these balconies, and I thought that was quite well done. Introduces you to the characters. Mm. But there were some people that left. I must admit, I was like, is this it? Is this the show? How are they going to do any stunts?
Well, that's why I think those people left, because I think they must have gone, this is naff. Why are we here watching this? But it's only like the pre-show before you go into the actual theatre and watch the actual show. And as you said, I still found it was still fun, like even though we didn't understand what they were saying.
No, it was really well done. Mm. And then you go into the actual show and they just do things that blow your mind. I don't know how much we should talk about it.
Yeah, there is some stuff in there that I've just never seen before.
They fly. Yeah. I mean, really. They don't just, there's no ropes. I don't really think there were any ropes. No. Do you reckon there were any ropes in that?
It was all, they were literally flying. And when you go and see it, you'll understand what we mean.
So So that was really cool.
Mm.
And we went to, I think we went to lunch after that.
Yeah, probably, but it was probably the when we went to that.
We went to Wolfgang Park.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went to lunch and then we came back and we did soaring.
Mm.
And for a popular ride, I have never been more disappointed. It was just for the amount of fuss that people go to in the morning of running around like idiots and the fact that all the fast passes are booked out at 9:30, bearing in mind that they do the traditional carded fast pass,
mm.
and that there's queues of, what, 3 hours during the day?
Oh, God, 3 hours.
Three hours. Yeah. If I'd waited 3 hours for that, I would have chucked the biggest sad. It just didn't justify that longer wait or that level of popularity. And yet, 50 metres away, maybe a little bit longer, but 50 metres away, you've got Pirates of the Caribbean, which is not just amazing visually. Like, you've got the, you know, the ride aspect, which was also amazing, like you said. And the wait time's like pretty much walk on, 10, 15 minutes at the most.
Yes, yeah.
I don't understand Shanghai. Shanghai, what? I don't what?
No, it's true. The Soarin' wasn't as, you know, spectacular as I was hoping it would be. And the CGI bits really stand out as being, this has been computer generated. There's, you know, because I believe the original Soarin' over California was all just actual footage. And the other thing was that there's supposed to be scents that you're supposed to smell while you're in the ride. And I swear we did not smell any scents. No. So I think the thing might not have been working properly.
Maybe that was the case. But it was just such a nothing ride. Like, there was nothing about it that I found endearing at all. Maybe it was just all the build-up in terms of, like, you know, it being so popular. I thought, wow, this is going to be spectacular, yeah. And we'd never been on a soaring before. Just, I mean, it is what it is. But the parade that we saw was pretty cool.
The parade was amazing. The parade was just a
whole new level.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. The all of the outside shows that we saw, like the fireworks and the parade and everything like that, were all just next level kind of stuff. I think for me, the highlight of the parade was there was this Mulan one where she was on this massive horse.
Mm-mm.
And then behind her, there was some people playing drums and the drums would set off fire just going out of them. It was absolutely just brilliant.
Just the scale and I think that, well, obviously everything's pretty new as well, so that's pretty cool.
The cast was so into it. Like, yeah. All the dancers and stuff would, you know, come up to you and high-five you and, you know, come up for pictures and stuff. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, and the green men.
Yeah.
Green army men, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, no, it was pretty well done. And we did Launch Bay.
Yeah, well, they had two areas. They had a Star Wars area, which was the launch bay,
mm-hmm.
and they had a Marvel area, which was similar to that, where you had meet and greets and other bits and pieces.
Mm.
Both were brilliant places to go and spend like an hour, just like walk around and getting your photographs with different characters. And we had in the launch bay, I did a meet and greet with Darth Vader and Darth Maul. Like, yeah, separately.
You know, I said thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, you're not into the Sith anymore, so that's fine. We did a meet and greet with R2-D2.
Yeah.
And we sat on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon.
That was really cool.
Mm, mm.
Like, inner nerd just went a little bit crazy there.
So, yeah, it was definitely worthwhile going and checking out the Star Wars launch bay. And it was really tucked away. Like, you had to go past the Buzz Lightyear and then down a back alley almost to find it. So if you didn't know it was there.
And that was similar. The Marvel area was very similar as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of it being just a little bit tucked out of the way. I think it was probably them just utilizing space to its maximum potential.
Yeah, it was. You're quite right about being tucked away. You had to go, you know, up and around a corner and pass a Mickey Mouse meet and greet. But that Marvel area was great. They had that game that we waited for, where you got to be Iron Man and take on the Incredible Hulk and that sort of thing. So that was a you know, an interesting interactive experience. And then they had the meet and greets, and the two characters we got to meet was Spider-Man, which was great in like a New York kind of setting.
That was really cool.
Mm.
Like, it was really well done. Like, the set was really cool. And, like, I'm not much of a poser when it comes to photos, but he's like, right, this is what we're doing. Okay. Okay, Spidey, we'll do that. And the photos turned out really well.
Yeah, the photos are great. Really good photos. I recommend, I think that Shanghai has enough to warrant getting the photo pass.
Mm.
Like, if you get out there and do the meet and greets and do the ride photographs, I mean, the amount of ride photos we got from Tron is just ridiculous.
That's because we rode it so much.
But yeah, it's definitely well worth it. So I recommend doing that. And the other character we met was this guy, you might not know him, called Captain America. And that was probably the highlight of the trip for me was meeting Cap, and
I had to like wipe the drool out of his beard.
he was everything I'd hoped he would be when I met him.
I know that he's got a half mask on, but pretty good casting, right?
What do you mean casting?
God damn it! It's not real.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, so meeting Captain America was brilliant, and I highly recommend if you get the chance to speak to him. It's really good. But yeah, I think just the whole thing, it amazes me that it was doing so well within, because it was about 8 months, 9 months after it opened that we went there.
Yeah.
And it was running like clockwork, really.
Yeah, I couldn't fault anything. I mean, I'd prepared myself for children going to the toilet and bins and gardens and spitting and carrying on like that. But there was nothing. And I'm easily grossed out when it comes to that stuff. And yet there's some stuff that doesn't gross me out that probably should. But like I was prepared, and we didn't have anything uncouth at all.
No, everything was great. And I don't know whether it was a time of year, if there was less people there or maybe what it was, but it was a really nice time of year to go.
Oh, I love going to these parks in the cooler weather. You talk about Disneyland Paris. I love going there. That was really lovely going there over the festive season. And the same thing for Shanghai as well.
Yeah, no, it was just a brilliant experience. And the park itself, it's like, you know, clearly a Disney park, but it's also very Chinese in the way that it's set out and whatnot.
Well, one of the things that we got to experience was that it was getting closer to Chinese New Year.
Mm.
So with that coming up, they did the decorations were just changing from Christmas to Lunar New Year decorations. So we got to experience that, and we got to experience lucky bags. Were they called lucky bags there? I think they were.
Were they lucky bags? I think so, yeah.
So we got to experience lucky bags, which was an experience. The first time I was just like, okay, so it's like a lucky dip?
Yeah, it's a lucky dip situation. It makes sense for stores as well, because it's kind of like an opportunity for them to get rid of stock they don't want anymore.
Oh, they've just got one or two of left.
Yeah, and they just chuck them into a bag and then say, for the price of this, you know, what, $30 bag, you get $100 worth of, you know, value out of it.
Pretty much.
And, yeah, and you went nuts for them.
Well, the first time, like, because I thought it might just be something neat to do. I say the first time because obviously I went back for more. But I got to the counter and the ladies was sort of indicating, like, to get the scissors and cut it open for me, because obviously that's sealed. Going back a little bit further, they, like, which one do you want? I'm like, oh, pick for me. And they're like, so they sort of, like, touch the outsides and they try and find the best bag for me. I thought that was pretty cool. And in Shanghai, they kept them behind the counter. Did you notice that? So you couldn't actually, you know, squeeze to feel what it was. So you had to point out which bag you wanted. And then they're indicating, you know, did I want to cut it open? I'm just like, oh, sure, yeah, why not? Let's see what we've got. And then they pulled everything out of the bag and I think they were as excited as I was. And they're like, oh, look, you got this, and oh, you've got that. And it was brilliant. It was very exciting.
Yeah, no, it was a really cool experience.
So I got two lucky bags, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got to Hong Kong and found they had them there as well.
Yay! But that was good. I mean, we ended up with some really neat gifts for nieces and nephews. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. No, it was good fun.
One of the things that we haven't talked about is that they had like a cocktail hour in the club lounge back at the hotel. And I guess this is probably the most use that we got out of the hotel because the pool was actually shut for renovations, so we didn't have a swimming pool that we could enjoy because they've got an indoor heated swimming pool. So the best way that we could utilize the hotel was visiting the club level at that cocktail time, one, so we could get a couple of cheeky drinks in, and they made a smashing martini, might I add. The other one was that we could actually see the fireworks from the lounge. How cool was that? Straight across the lake, a view straight to the castle. And it was a great way to enjoy the fireworks on a chilly night.
Definitely. I think that the positioning of this hotel is the best like positioning of a hotel that you could have to be able to, you know, look pretty much straight down Main Street from where you are.
Yeah.
Or Mickey Avenue, as it's called here.
That's true.
And so you could see the castle. You could see the projections on the castle. You could see all the fireworks. It was great. That was the first time we saw the fireworks was from that vantage point on that first night. And then we actually saw it in the park the second night. And I don't think you could choose between the two. I think they were both great ways of seeing it.
Absolutely. I couldn't have chosen between the two of them. If you didn't have club level, though, I think you would be able to see it from the steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even from the Bacchus Lounge as well, which is one of the food venues within the hotel. What was it, like a bar?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you could get some food as well.
So there was a lot of, you know, just good vantage points from the Disneyland Hotel.
Absolutely.
The Disney Town, I think, is another place that you could spend a bit of time exploring. Because they had the Lego shop that was there, and they also had this other Marvel shop as well, which sold lots of different Marvel and other like high-end action figure kind of stuff.
And they had the Hot Toy shop as well.
That was the one I'm talking about, the Hot Toy shop.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it was, and that was where you also had all of the food and drink. And the good thing was, even though the park itself is a dry park, if you wanted to leave and have some food and get alcoholic beverages, you could get them out just outside the park in Disney Town. And there was a separate entrance just near where Wolfgang Puck is, where you could leave the park and then go back into the park from there.
And did we catch that there was a Club 33 on that entrance as well?
There was a sign, and I'm assuming if there's a sign, there is a Club 33 there, but I never saw an actual door with it or anything like that.
And the entryway into the park, like the main entry, that was really lovely because you walk through those gardens, they call it Wishing Star Park, right? And you walk through those, and the entry statement piece is Steamboat Willie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sort of rides up and down on that fountain. That was really nice. Yeah. Had a little bit of music, a little bit of sound effects going.
You could sit there watching it for a while. It was really an interactive kind of experience. It was great. And the in Disney Town, they had the Disneyland shop there as well. And that was huge. That was mega.
Epic.
Yeah, yeah. And we were lucky as well because when we got there, a lot of the grand opening stuff was on sale. So we were getting bargains left, right and centre.
Yeah, which was just a bonus really because we would have picked that stuff up even if it was full price.
Yeah.
Probably not as much of it. Jelly bellies, for goodness sake.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, it was just brilliant. I mean, everything you think with a park where it's been open not that long, that there would be things that didn't go right and that, you know, there were still teething problems. But it was just so everything was on the money. It felt like a park that had been lived in for like 10 years. You know, everything was worked so perfectly.
Absolutely, including their Buzz Lightyear. Oh, you're winning in this one.
Yeah, you just keep laughing, and then, like next year I'll just stop letting you win.
But one of the things I really enjoyed was that they do take advantage of the photo pass. So there's plenty of photographers around in the streets as well as being able to get the ride photos, which I thought was really good. And one of the ways that I think that Shanghai does it just that little bit better than Hong Kong.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because I mean, if you've got the photographers there, you know, it's, you can take advantage of that photo pass and just get so many more photographs for the money that you spend on it.
And again, I think it was a really nice time of year to go because we had that transition of, you know, the Christmas. We got to see the Christmas decorations, and then we got to see the transition into the Lunar New Year stuff.
Mm, mm. But yeah, just magical time of year. It was, you know, just couldn't have asked for better. Like, well, one thing I would have liked is if that pool had been open, because I believe that pool actually had like music and stuff under the water and that sort of thing. So that would have been good. But, you know, at least it gives us a reason to go back as well as.
Yeah, what are you doing this Christmas?
And we also missed out on quite a few things as well. I mean, even though we spent 3 days there, we still missed out on a few, like, you know, we didn't see the Tarzan show. We didn't do the Alice in Wonderland maze. We didn't do Camp Discovery. Is it Camp Discovery, I think?
It was shut, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't shut. We just didn't we didn't get in there to do it. Apparently, that's awesome. That's okay. Really cool. And you got to wear closed-toed shoes in there. So don't go there wearing your thongs or anything like that.
Okay. Point noted.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just so excited to, you know, go back there at some point. And it's very exciting to know it's reasonably close to us. I mean, it's what, 11-hour journey to get there?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's at least we're not talking like, you know, a couple of 24 hours to get.
Yeah, we're not talking a day's travel.
No. And
and it's on the same time zone as us, yeah. Which makes a huge difference in terms of not getting jet lagged. So, you know, you've got your travel time, sure, but if the way that we did it, we flew overnight from Perth to Hong Kong and then got a transfer flight from Hong Kong to Shanghai. And it meant that we got there at around, we probably got to Shanghai around 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, we didn't have any jet lag per se to deal with because there was no time change as well as the travel time.
Yeah, it was very, very convenient.
Yeah.
So thank you, Will, for putting us in the same line. But yeah, I highly recommend Shanghai Disneyland to anyone. Like, even as a first Disney park, I'd recommend it.
I wasn't sure how the language barrier was going to go. And like you said before, there was enough English speakers in the within the cast members.
Yeah, but it was the only thing I wonder, though, like, if the first Pirates of the Caribbean you go on is Battle for the Sunken Treasure, is that going to ruin your experience when you go on the normal Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh, totally. It'd be like going on Pooh's Honey Hunt versus the other Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. You'd be like, oh, this is a bit naff.
So maybe don't go to Shanghai first. Go to the other parks first.
No, totally. Like, get Disney to raise the bar.
No, they're not going to rip out the Pirates of the Caribbean the other rides and put that the Sunken Treasure in there.
But they could put Aspects in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're two different ones. I think you could put Battle for the Sunken Treasure into the other parks as well as having the original there.
Right.
Yeah, because it's such a different ride. It is, like, it's got elements of Pirates, but it's a different ride entirely.
So, what are you doing this Christmas?
Stop pressuring me.
I think that this show has reached its natural conclusion. Yeah. I'm going to go and do some negotiating. So on that happy note, you can catch us everywhere on the social medias using at Diz Down Under. You can also find us at DizDownUnder.com. And should we give them our phone numbers as well? Oh, I think it's time to wind it up. Yeah. I've been Catherine.
And I've been Lewis.
Thanks for joining us down under. We'll catch you again next week.
Bye.
Diz Down Under is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Any external audio played on this podcast is for the purpose of discussion and are the property of the copyright holders. All original content is the property of Diz Down Under, a podcast produced by the Gentlemen of Pop Culture, all rights reserved. This podcast has been brought to you by the Gentlemen of Pop Culture.